And hour number two, welcome back to the program. Will Nault, Logan Gordon along with you. It's the big show in the morning. Just for one day. Logan's gone tomorrow. We'll have a new surprise for you on the Tuesday edition of the show. Mentioned it earlier on in hour number one. In hour two every day this week, we'll have an opportunity for you to win your way into the Stampede. The rodeo and, of course, the chuck wagons. Rangeland Derby is back for the first time since 2019. And we've got tickets for you. Today's winner will get tickets to the rodeo on July 11th. So a week from today. Tuesday's winner, a week from Tuesday. So every day that you win, you're getting into the rodeo that week, day of course, Stampede Week. So today's winner, going to the rodeo on July 11th. Tomorrow, going to the rodeo on July 12th. Wednesday, July 13th, et cetera, for Thursday and Friday. Pretty simple today for you to win your way in. A prize pack includes two complimentary one-day park passes. You can redeem those at any of the Calgary Stampede park entrances, a VIP tour of the Chuckwagon barn area for you and your guest. That's happening on July 13th, so the Wednesday of Stampede. Every winner will go on that day. Access into the GMC grandstand for standing room for the Cowboys Rangeland Derby. Races begin, of course, nightly 8 o'clock. Pre-show begins at 7:30, followed by the grandstand show. And one pair of tickets to the rodeo. And as I mentioned before, today's winner will go next Monday to the fourth day of the Calgary Stampede Rodeo, July 11th. Pretty simple, 960-960. Get your texting fingers ready. First and last name on the text. And I mentioned today will be fairly straightforward. I just need you to give me the winner of the 2019 Rangeland Derby. And every correct answer will be entered into the draw. We'll give you that winner later on this hour. 960-960, first and last name on the text. Who was the 2019 winner of the Rangeland Derby? A correct answer will win you a spot into the draw, and we'll announce that winner here later on this hour. And you'll get everything I just mentioned in the prize pack. If you didn't win today, we've got opportunities for you Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday here on The Morning Show. He's Logan, I'm Will, and look what the cat dragged in on the Atlas Pizza and Sports Bar guest hotline. CFL Insider from Three Down Nation is our friend, our pal, our buddy, Justin Dunk. Good morning, sir.
How are you guys doing this beautiful morning?
We're doing excellent. How are you?
Doing well, my guy. It's good to be on with you.
Yeah, always fun to chat with you. And it's a bit of a different week in the CFL as the week will come to an end tonight. But let's go all the way back to Thursday. Some adversity for the first time this year for the BC Lions and for quarterback Nathan Rourke. But JD, they get it done again, 34-31 over Ottawa. And I think everybody, whether you cover it, whether you're a fan, there's probably not a lot of people you cross paths with that is not talking about Nathan Rourke and the BC Lions.
That's right. I think it's brought some new fans into the equation for the CFL and maybe some fans of Canadian football back into it. I'll give you an example. So I played at the University of Guelph, of course, but most of my buddies that were teammates there with the Griffins follow the NFL. We have a fantasy football league that's been going for over a decade. But my teammates now are tuning in because of Nathan Rourke starting as a Canadian quarterback. They're talking about Trey Ford as well, who I'm sure we'll get to. But Rourke has certainly been impressive to bring in new fans, maybe old fans of the game. And he showed in Ottawa, in the nation's capital, that he could deal with some adversity, which was going to happen at some point, bounce back and lead his team to victory in a difficult spot on a short week, going on the road to Ottawa against a Redblacks team that had a bye week, extra time to prepare for Rourke and company and come out with a win.
Yeah, and I mean, on the other side, I mean, Ottawa's now 0-3, and they've lost all three games by a combined 12 points.
It's a close margin there for Ottawa. I still think they're a better football team than they were a year ago. I'm sure Paul Appelese is feeling a little bit of heat after the season he had last year and the record more so, and then starting this year 0-3. But it sounds weird. It's a different kind of 0-3 than getting blown out, as you alluded to. They've been some close losses. They got to clean some things up. They could easily be 3-0. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, they're in that East division, so they're not that far behind.
No, they aren't. And the one thing I will say there, I think it's been the trend so far for Ottawa in those three games. I know they scored the three rushing touchdowns against BC, but they just haven't been able to close drives out with touchdowns.
That's exactly it. They've been moving the football up and down the field. Jeremiah Masoli has looked good, you know, only threw for 162 yards though against BC, but they got it going a little bit on the ground with William Powell. They got to come away with more touchdowns, though, and that's going to be up to Paul Appelese and Masoli to scheme it up when they get down there in what should be the money zone.
He is Justin Dunk, all things CFL. The CFL insider for Three Down Nation joins us here on the Big Show in the Morning, Sportsnet 960. Logan.
Morning, JD. How are you, pal?
Yeah, loving life, my man.
Good to hear, buddy. What did you make of Trey Ford's CFL debut at quarterback against the Ticats?
All in all, it didn't look like the game was above him. Numbers didn't necessarily jump off the page. You know, I think there were some throws, especially where he went down the field trying to connect with Darrell Walker, left the ball there that Cameron Kelly intercepted that I think could have easily been a touchdown and would have changed maybe the outlook for a lot of people's perspectives on Ford. But he showed that certainly he's got the ability to escape the pocket, made Simone Lawrence look kind of silly a couple times, who's a veteran guy, knows how to take smart angles, but that speed that Ford has is apparent, but he needs to be better in terms of being more comfortable in the pocket and going through his reads. That'll come with time, right? Most young quarterbacks, especially with the athletic ability, the caliber of Ford, they're going to look at their first read, you know, maybe their second, and after that, they're going to try to feel the pressure and get out of the pocket. And I think that's what we saw early from him, especially in the game. He kind of settled in as it went along. So I think the early returns are solid, you know, regardless of the passport. A guy coming out of a win in his first CFL start is definitely a positive.
And that running ability, that athleticism, important in that game, especially against Hamilton, JD, with no James Wilder for the Elks. That's got to be a big positive for him and, you know, something that he can use to his benefit going forward.
Definitely. It was critical for him, the way that he was able to move the chains with his legs a couple of times, key moments in the game as well. And you don't necessarily want to rely on that as a quarterback, because now there's film out there on you. So defenses are going to adjust. They're going to take better angles. They're going to make sure that you don't break contain, or they're going to try as best they can. But that was a surprising thing to me, is it looked like the Ticats were kind of trying to adjust in game, and even though Lawrence, I noticed on one play in particular, was supposed to be the contained guy, Ford still got outside of him. So that speed is certainly apparent. And if you combine that with an ability to get more comfortable and beat teams from the pocket, he could be dangerous.
Other side of this, got to talk about what a disastrous start it's been for the Hamilton Tiger Cats. And Dane Evans looked all sorts of frustrated, upset, disappointed in his own play and his team's play. What did you make of another loss to start the season for Hamilton?
Have a seat, Dane.
It might be time for that. I mean, if you're looking at any other quarterback, potentially even the CFL history, you turn the ball over as much as Dane Evans had to start the season, you would have been benched by now. You would have been benched in one of those earlier games where it cost you against Calgary, right? And we see this similar thing happen against another Alberta team coming in there. And really, that was the story of the game. It helps out Ford get a win in his first start, but Evans kind of gave to him. He had the two picks, and yeah, some of his interceptions have gone off the hands of his receivers, which you can understand, so it inflates that total. But the fumbles just can't happen, and you just can't be throwing the ball into high traffic areas as well and expect there to be completions every single time defenders are lurking and if it's in tight windows. Now, some of that's going to happen in pro football, but Evans needs to take more care of the ball. They have this bye week now where there's a lot of talk around Hamilton and the fans want to see some changes made, be it to the offense. There's people calling for Tommy Condell to be let go as the offensive coordinator, but I don't necessarily think this is all Condell's fault either. It's maybe not even all on Evans, because some of them have bounced off hands, but ultimately when you look at the offense, you're going to look at the quarterback, and Evans has to be better. And he seems down about it. He doesn't really know what's going on, but he's got to figure it out really quickly, because in my mind, his career in this league is hanging in the balance.
What's been the biggest difference between last year and this year for the Ticats? Because this doesn't even look, it's largely the same group, JD. I mean, some of the guys are, you know, I know Brandon Banks is gone, Jeremiah Masoli's not there, but this is largely the same group that over three seasons went to back-to-back Grey Cups and looked like a very solid squad under Orlando Steinauer, and now they just look like a shell of their former selves.
There's some key differences, and for me, first and foremost, it's Jeremiah Masoli and his leadership. Whether he was starting for the team or when he was injured, he still stuck around, and that leadership that he provided really was a guiding light for this team. And I think in 2019, you can't necessarily compare that group to the team that we saw in 2021 or even especially this year, because that was just a juggernaut with Brandon Banks playing at an elite level, obviously won the MLP that season. That really helped out Braylon Addison. Now the Ticats have shifted where they believe that Addison can be a number one guy, but he hasn't necessarily shown that. There's been some focus on him, but you've seen more flashes from Stephen Dunbar Jr. or Tim White, guys who are emerging but aren't at that level like the Ticats were in 2019. And then you take away Jagera Davis, who is one of the best pass rushers in the league, goes down to QEW and signs with the Argos. I think that's impacted their defense. They've gone Canadian there with Mason Bennett, who's in his first year as a starter, which is an adjustment. So I think those small things have gone against the Ticats, but most importantly, Masoli's leadership being gone. And we should say that, you know, it didn't necessarily happen in 2019, but in 2021, they had a slow start too. They weren't 0-4, but they had lost the first couple. It just seems like a trend that Ticats need to get reversed in subsequent years, but going to have to deal with this 0-4 start in the face. But fortunately, again, the East Division hasn't stacked up a bunch of wins, so they're not that far out of it.
And speaking of the East Division, another loss in the East Division against a Western opponent as the Rough Riders respond from the smackdown in Montreal that had Riders media up in arms with a 41-20 win at Mosaic Stadium. A good third quarter. Cody Fajardo looked like he was dealing with a bit of an injury there. It was a penalty-filled game. JD, I think close to 300 yards in penalties between both teams. What did you make of the Riders bounce back against the Owls?
Yeah, all that you said was bang on, but for me, it was the defense. Like, this defense is so underrated for Saskatchewan, and I just think they deserve more credit. Jason Chivers, a defensive coordinator, scheming it up. You have Nick Marshall making a big play in that game as well. The cover man, who I think is underrated as well. It might be arguably the best cover man in the league right now, especially on the weak side. And yeah, there were 20 points on the board for Montreal in the game, but seven came in garbage time. So I just really think the Riders' defense has been the consistent factor. We've seen Fajardo play really well this season, and then we've seen him not play so well, especially in that game in Montreal. But the defense was all over Trevor Harris and forced some turnovers that really inflated the scoreline, and I think that's a group that deserves more praise.
A few more with Justin Dunk, CFL Insider with Three Down Nation. What do the Owls do at quarterback? I mean, none of these guys seem to want it. I know that was a short leash for Vernon Adams, and then he missed the game with illness, but are they going to go back to VA in the next game?
You know, that's going to be up in the air, but I just think based on the completion percentage, Harris was still close to 70%. That they could lean to go with Harris again because he was just under so much pressure. The offensive line has to play better, right? There was six sacks in the ball game, but there was just constant pressure that Harris had in his face. And if you're going to go with a guy who's usually in the pocket, you got to protect him better. So in my mind, I think it'd probably go back to Harris. They were going into a bit of a buzzsaw in Saskatchewan, was all amped up to show that game in Montreal was just an anomaly. So I think you should stick with one guy here and not go back and forth.
And on the other side, everyone does talk about Cody Fajardo, but are we seeing a bit of a star in the making in Jamal Morrow, who now has two 100-yard games in four here to start the season?
He is a guy that the Riders were confident in going with and let him, William Powell walk in free agency because they felt like Morrow could take the next step. And I think you're right, Will. Morrow has the makings of a guy that could be dynamic as a runner and also as a receiver. That's one thing that they really liked about him was his ability out of the backfield. So he could be multiple, not just known as a guy that runs the rock. And I think if you got a defense as strong as I alluded to earlier with Shivers and the group over there playing as well as they are, and you get a ground game going consistently with Morrow getting close to or over 100 yards a couple times, then you don't need Cody Fajardo to be a superstar. He can play efficient ball like he did on Saturday night, complete over 60% of his passes, 224 yards, two touchdowns, just turn it over and just not turn it over and be able to win the game.
Tonight's game, of course, the week wraps up with a battle in Toronto as the Argos are at home to the Winnipeg Blue Bombers. And I know you were on Tim and Fred's last week to close out the week as we previewed week four. But now as this game is right in front of us, it seems like all the storyline is a bit of a revenge game of sorts for Andrew Harris.
It is. Ryan Dinwiddie, the Argos head coach, said he knows that all his players in the back of their minds are wanting to win one for Andrew Harris against his former team, even though that's not necessarily going to be the focus. But it is. That is the storyline of this game because it's the only time the Bombers and Argos will play this season. Harris won't go back to Winnipeg during the year, and the only time these two teams could potentially play is in a crossover playoff game or the Grey Cup. So this is a massive game, one that I'm sure Harris has had circled on the calendar. He's going to want to show well, as are the Argos, coming off that shellacking in BC in week three.
Well, I was going to say, I mean, we've talked a lot about how bad the East Division is, and the Argos, although they lead the division with a 1-1 record, I mean, that defense, yes, coming off a an absolute teeth-kicking, but when you look at what the Argos have done through two games, I mean, that defense has really got to step it up, especially against this Winnipeg team who, you know, when he's on, Zach Collaros showed us last year and even this year through three games that he can still absolutely get it done. And as much as you want to win it for your running back, the defense has got to do their job as well.
They do, and former Calgary Stampeders defensive line coach Corey Mace over there in his first season as a coordinator going through it a little bit early on. The unit looked solid against Montreal in the Argos' first game of the season where they eked out that win, but to give up 44 was just so surprising. I know Nathan Rourke is almost godlike right now, the way that he's playing, and I'm not biased at all being a former Canadian University quarterback, but they got to play better on defense. They got a lot of veteran guys over there. Sean Oakman in the middle has shown he can be a beast. Shane Ray, the former first-round pick in the NFL, has shown a little bit of juice. Enoch Mwamba in the linebacking core. Those guys got to come together quickly and get it turned around, especially after giving up 44. And I think it's the big chunk plays that really hurt them in BC.
Of course, as we close things out with our conversation with you, the Calgary Stampeders had a bye in week four. They'll play the early game in week five, just three games on the sked, but they'll be in Edmonton this coming Thursday. Kind of a two-part question for you, Justin. First of all, your thoughts on Calgary's 3-0 start. And the second part of that is, the way this West Division is playing, I mean, there's going to be a lot more, we haven't talked about a lot, but a lot more divisional games in the schedule this year, and it's setting up to be a pretty fun final three quarters of the year here.
It certainly will be down the stretch there to decide the West Division, and as for Calgary's 3-0 start, I don't think they're playing their best football yet, and they've put that record up, and it seems like Bo Levi Mitchell is coming into form there, had his best performance just before the bye week, and it was when we talked about it on your show with you guys, he was dealing with some soreness and goes into that game and plays really well and has the bye week to rest up and get ready to go into Edmonton. And in my mind, it's not a must-win game in the sense that there's a lot of pressure there, but when you're playing Edmonton this year, you got to get that victory, especially in the West, if you want to contend for that top spot.
Great stuff, Justin. Appreciate the time. As always, you can follow Justin on Twitter at JDunk12 for all your information on the CFL as he and his fine team at Three Down Nation all over everything when it comes to the Canadian Football League. JD, appreciate the time, man. Take care of yourself.
Yeah, buddy. We'll talk to you guys down the road.
You bet. There he is, Justin Dunk from Three Down Nation joining us on the Atlas Pizza and Sports Bar guest hotline. 14-time Consumer Choice Award winner. For takeout or delivery, call 403-248-3344 or dine in at Atlas Pizza 6060 Memorial Drive Northeast. We will get to the giveaway coming up later on this hour. If you missed it earlier, you can still find your way on the text line at 960-960. We're having a little bit of technical difficulties with our text line, but if it doesn't come back, we might have to pivot. But for now, keep sending them in at 960-960. I'll rehash it right now. Who won the 2019 Rangeland Derby? If you answer that correctly, you could potentially win a beautiful prize pack courtesy our promo team for the Calgary Stampede. Two complimentary one-day passes. You can use those at any of the park entrances. A VIP tour of the Chuckwagon Barn area for you and a guest on July 13th. And access into the GMC Grandstand for standing room place at the Cowboys Rangeland Derby. Races, of course, nightly at 8 o'clock. Pre-show begins at 7:30, followed by the Grandstand Show. And one pair of rodeo tickets. Today's winner will get to go to the rodeo coming up next Monday. Hard to believe the Calgary Stampede kicks off on Friday, but here we are, and it's going to be a fun closing out to the week. You got the NHL draft Thursday, Friday, Stampede on Friday, and then, of course, into NHL free agency next week, and we'll close out the hour with some NHL talk. We'd love your thoughts if we can get to the text line at 960-960. There wasn't a lot of news, but potentially just a waiting game for the Calgary Flames on number 13, Johnny Gaudreau. We'll explain that and more as we roll on Hour 2. Big Show in the Morning is live on Sportsnet 960. The Fan. Hour 2 continues. Welcome back to the program. Thanks for following along today. Appreciate it. We got a busy Hour 3 upcoming. Two very special guests, plus your thoughts on what you want to talk about. All coming up before 9 o'clock this morning. Been teasing this for a couple of weeks. Will not Logan Gordon, by the way, along with you today. Been teasing this for a couple of weeks, and now I can give you more details. Join us on August 13th at Optimus Park for the inaugural Sportsnet 960 Slow Pitch Tournament, all in support of Kids Sport Calgary. Register your team right now for $285 plus tax at sportsnet.ca/960. This will go until all spots are full. It'll be a jam-packed one-day tournament, and here's some of the things it'll include. A welcome package. It says here a wicked welcome package, so that means it must be fantastic. A home run derby. Our friends from Wild Rose Brewery will be on-site with some delicious beer. A food truck and all kinds of prizes, including special prizes for the winning team. And certainly, if you want to know more about this tournament, you can go to our website right now. But I can tell you that you're guaranteed four games. Eight teams will make the playoffs. They're a single elimination. And it is a co-ed tournament. So, of course, the standard slow pitch rules when talking about co-ed leagues do apply. 10 players, three of those will be females. Of course, you can have more than three, but those are the minimum rules. And all participants of your team must be 18 plus. Thanks to our friends at Wild Rose, Tuxedo Source for Sports, and Atlas Pizza and Sports Bar for making this event possible. To register and get more information, you can go to our website right now, sportsnet.ca/960. Should be a lot of fun, and looking forward to that coming up August 13th at Optimist Park. Okay, lots happened over the weekend, Logan. First of all, I do want to mention this. It is the 4th of July. We've talked about that. Independence Day south of the border. And the annual Nathan's Hot Dog Eating Contest is back. Joey Chestnut is the 3,000 favorite over at the Caesars Sportsbook. You can take the field for plus 1,100. But Joey Chestnut seems to be competing against himself in this tournament. We'll get GVP and Dumas' thoughts on this as well. But if you could pick one food item to compete in a eating contest, what would it be? Like hot dogs, I feel would be difficult because you got to.
Logo hates this.
This is so gross.
You're dunking.
He hates this.
You're dunking the bun in the water.
This is the worst one ever.
I'm gonna send you clips from the hot dog contest.
So sick.
I think Joey choked down like 75 hot dogs.
That's so gross, like that. Man. That's just. I can't watch this dude eat food.
GVP, the size of your mitts and the size of you, you could probably crush 70.
Not a big eater though.
Are you a big hot dog guy?
I love me a hot dog.
So that you feel like this could
golf course,
this could ruin this could ruin hot dogs for you? Is that what you're saying?
I think so. I'm just gonna stick to the old golf course hot dogs.
That's delicious. I mean, there's not a better choice at the turn than a hot dog. What about chicken wings? I feel like
that's where I was gonna go.
I feel like that would be the popular choice.
I feel like that's a good default. Yeah, I mean, you could go boneless. It's probably safe if you're gonna do like
boneless. Then you're just hammering chunks of chicken in your mouth.
Yeah, but you see how fast these guys put food in their mouth. You get
well. That's what makes it fun. That's what makes it fun is you have a little bit of a challenge with the bone. Joey doesn't get to eat the hot dogs without a bun. Boneless chicken bites. Get out of here.
Bun's not gonna kill you.
It might.
Good. It's a lot of
bread.
These are
so gross. Every time we talk about this, I just get sick to my stomach.
And
I can't stand watching it.
Joey holds like all kinds of records, eh?
Oh, it's just disgusting. Because I think Dumont, you and me did this last year.
Yeah, we did.
Right around the same time. Yeah. And you went through like a myriad of stats of different things that he owns, like world records that
he owns. Does, like chicken, chicken wings.
Disgusting.
182 wings in 30 minutes.
Like, how do you do that?
It could be changing too. That could be like improved now. That was back in 2007.
Joey going for his seventh title in a row. Talk about a dynasty.
Yeah, 76 last year in 10 minutes.
That's the GOAT.
This will always be a Kobayashi household.
He did crush 32 Big Macs in 38 minutes. That's insane.
His body.
And he, this one's crazy because, I mean, the food itself, you're like, eh, whatever. Red beans and rice. He ate 39 and a half bowls of that in 8 minutes. That means he consumed about 36,000 calories.
That's unbelievable.
In 8 minutes. I do not want to look at this
guy. He ate a whole 9.35 pound turkey in, where is that? In 10 minutes.
That guy's poor toilet, man. It's unbelievable.
Dude, you got to donate this guy's body to science after he dies. There's something wrong with him.
55 glazed donuts in 8 minutes.
Like, that's, you can't, how do you do that?
141 hard boiled eggs in 8 minutes.
Oof. Does he even swallow? He does he even chew the hot dogs, or
I don't know,
just barely?
I can't watch I can't like
just
break
slide
it down.
Them right down.
So you won't be watching at 10 o'clock?
No, this one, like I'm not. Blood doesn't bother me. Gore. That's what I'm fine with. I can't watch this guy eat hot dogs. I really can't. It's just the next. Dumont's laughing over there.
So,
it's so gross, man. I can't do it.
Is it the dipping in the water, or is it just?
It's just the way he shoves them in his gullet. Oh, okay. Yeah, Will's doing it with like the palm of his hands thing. I just can't. Like, I can't do that, man.
So if you're listening right now,
28 pounds of poutine in 10 minutes in 2019.
It's good. It's
28 gross. Pounds.
It's good. If you're listening right now, be sure to send Logan all of the eating competition clips you find at Fan960 Logan on Twitter.
Blocked.
His phone number is.
Whoa, okay, now. Let's. Yeesh.
Text some pictures of Joey Chestnut.
Please don't.
His Twitter feed's going to be fun this afternoon. A couple of texts at 960-960.
Oh, you got in. It's working.
Yeah, I did, yeah.
Okay. Great. Perfect.
Someone
timing.
Says they could crush 3,000 pierogies.
That's heavy.
That's a lot of.
That's heavy.
You're talking about a lot of calories.
Bado.
It's a lot of calories. Pierogies are delicious.
Yeah, though. Look, coming from a Ukrainian family, I'm all for the pierogies. But man, are you sitting with a brick in your stomach for.
Well, Logan, I know what you. I know what you you can do when you get home today. Watch Beard Meets Food on YouTube. Someone says on the text line.
Gross.
Hey.
Whew.
Let's get back to some real things. You can text in your food thoughts at 960-960. Yeah, but you're not really contributing because you're grossed out. So we're gonna.
On. I'm having the conversation. I these are just.
See, and pizza seems to be the hard one, right? I mean, these are 2-foot slices, so that's a lot of pizza. But he only made it through 6.5 slices in 10 minutes. But if you think about it, that's over 12 feet of pizza.
Yeah, there's crusts, there's toppings, and so I think pizza would be a hard one. I think
47 grilled cheese in 10 minutes.
To lactose intolerant, that would kill me. That might kill me. I can have like one grilled cheese and I'm okay, but
grilled cheese and tomato soup, delicious. So there you go. There's your look at today's sporting events. Of course, there is all kinds of baseball today. Nationals and Marlins, first game on the sched. Blue Jays will be on the West Coast in Oakland at 7 o'clock. We've got that one for you here on Sportsnet 960. You can also watch it on Sportsnet West. But in the meantime, if you're working today, or maybe you're not working, you can tune in at 10 a.m. to watch Joey Chestnut crush hot dogs at Coney Island. Delicious. I didn't get any GVP and Dumont are not going to participate. They're done. They don't want to eat hot dogs in 10 minutes.
I just don't think I could.
You could eat like three.
I could eat three in 10 minutes for sure, yeah.
Five?
Five, yeah, probably.
I think my max could be like five or six.
Yeah.
Depending how big are the dogs, but.
Well, they're Nathan's, you know. They might be a little...
Well, they're big suckers.
Yeah.
Delicious, too.
Five might be too much.
Yeah, it's okay.
Yeah. I know the boys at Bonton, they sell them frozen. You can buy the Nathan's.
Oh, really?
Yeah, oh, yeah.
Good shout-out. Good shout-out. Couple of texts at 960-960. You guys are supposed to be announcing the Gaudreau signing, not talking about hot dogs. Well, we would give it to you if there was a signing to announce. The only news over the weekend, courtesy of our pal Frank Saravelli, who will join us tomorrow over at Daily Faceoff, wrote about this on Friday. The top 50 UFAs, of course, headlined by Johnny Gaudreau. The longer this goes on, as we've said all along, the less optimistic I think you are if you're the Calgary Flames, and it's believed, according to Frank and our very own Elliot Friedman. Logan, there is an offer on the table, 8 years, $9.5 million per season for Johnny Gaudreau. And as we've said all along, I don't think it's about money. Calgary certainly is the team that can give him the most money thanks to that eighth year. Other teams could, but they're going to have to certainly make that AAV number a lot larger than $9.5 million. So this is, of course, a total of 76, but whether it's 76, 80, or 84, as Frank writes, there's significantly more money available in Calgary than anywhere else. And for those that were worried, the Flames are not lowballing Johnny Gaudreau. Sources close to Gaudreau indicate he truly does not know what he wants to do. And I think part of that is that genuine love for Calgary. And part of it is a pregnant wife and thinking about the next phase of your life and where you want to spend it. I don't know if we get an answer before the draft on Thursday. I think Treliving would love that, but not sure we get one. But the longer we go on with no answer, the more that becomes your answer. And that, of course, would be thanks, but no thanks. It'll be curious to see where this goes. Of course, Calgary has until July 12th at 11:59 p.m. Eastern to offer that eighth year.
It's just, it almost feels like an unwinnable situation right now for the Flames, because you never want to shut the door on Johnny coming back. But at some point, when do you pivot as an organization and start looking at whatever plan B is in this situation? To me, that's the toughest one, because, you know, sitting here on July 4th, 9 days away from free agency, I don't blame any free agent with a chance to look at the open market for taking that opportunity. I really don't. Especially a guy like Johnny Gaudreau, who's been in one franchise, one organization for his entire career. You're going to be curious to see what's out there, to see if there is a place where maybe you feel more comfortable family-wise and still feel as though you can be competitive and try to win a Stanley Cup. You don't always get that option as a player, and you don't always get that opportunity, and especially for Johnny Gaudreau, coming off what may be the best season he ever has in the NHL, his value might never be this high again. That allure of free agency, I think, is very hard right now, but at what point do you, again, pivot if you're Brad Treliving and company? Because we've said this for a couple of weeks doing this on the afternoons, Will. You don't want to be the guy left without a dance partner at the end of this. You don't want to be sitting there next week, you know, on Thursday or Friday, the 14th or 15th, Johnny signed somewhere else, and your next couple of options have found new homes or you weren't able to get something done. I think ideally you'd like to know by the draft, but maybe Johnny doesn't know. Maybe he's not ready to make a decision by then.
And is that money really going to be used at the draft, or are you using that more in free agency? Because, of course, the biggest, I guess, thing you'd get in return, you don't get anything in terms of personnel or draft picks if Johnny Gaudreau decides to walk, but you would be getting cap space. Is that used more at the draft, or is that used more on July 13th, or is that a trade and all a week or 2 weeks after the draft? Like, it doesn't necessarily have to be at the draft. We've just talked about that a lot because historically that's where Brad Treliving's got a lot of work done. And as we've, you know, looked at now in the salary cap era, it's become kind of trade deadline 2.0. And in fact, it's been more busy than the trade deadline the last handful of years. And I think ideally if you're the Flames, you'd love to know what you're doing with that $9 million, because maybe you are going to make a hockey trade at the draft, or maybe you're trading his rights, but you're probably not getting a lot for his rights, knowing that the time to sign him would be about 5 or 6 days later. So it'll be curious to see what happens if he does end up leaving. But right now, it's 8 years, $9.5 million per season on the table, $76 million. And as Frank put it today in his article, or on the weekend on his, in his article, Brad Treliving just sitting idling in that Brinks truck on Gaudreau's driveway because he's waiting for an answer.
Yeah, and I think it's even more intriguing for me because the Flames don't have that first round pick. You're probably sitting there, you know, on the phone maybe a little bit more than you normally are during this type of season, right? You've given that first rounder to Montreal for the Tyler Toffoli trade, and now you're kind of sitting on your hands until day two. Well, that's never really been Brad Treliving's MO at drafts. He's gotten some of his best work done, you know, at drafts that have been in person the last 2 years. That hasn't been the case because of COVID and doing the drafts virtually. But having all the GMs back in Montreal on the draft floor, you've got some idle time. What can you get done in that period? Is there work to be done that still leaves Johnny Gaudreau's money available to him? I think that's an interesting one too. You know, what can Brad potentially do around the edges of this team that still leaves that door open? It's tough because we've talked so much about how can your offseason really even begin until number 13 is dealt with one way or the other. And here you go. This week coming up, you've got your first big moment of the NHL offseason at the draft coming up. And as of right now, it doesn't sound like you're any closer to a final decision.
No, and you're right. It probably is the first domino that indicates what you can do if you're the Flames in terms of spending that money at the draft with a trade or free agency. So yeah, you're 100% bang on. We've said that all along, that Calgary's offseason really can't begin until you get an answer from Johnny Gaudreau's camp. And right now there has been no answer, and no answer, I think the more this goes on, feels like it is your answer. So we'll keep an eye on that. Frank Saravelli will join us tomorrow. We'll see what has changed or what happened over the weekend. But as of now, Johnny Gaudreau and the Flames no closer. There's an offer on the table, and Johnny Gaudreau truly does not know what he wants to do with the next 7 to 8 years of his life. We talked about this earlier on in hour number one, but it was a busy weekend elsewhere. Unfortunately for Flames fans, none of it related to them, but the Preds acquired Ryan McDonagh from the Lightning in exchange for Philippe Myers and prospect Grant Mismatch. Of course, we got news last week this was likely going to happen before the draft, and it did happen before the draft, and with a no movement, no trade clause, Ryan McDonagh had a bit of control on the situation. He talked about waiving for the Preds.
The first thing that stood out to me was, I think, just, you know, where the team is at competitively. You know, anybody that's played Nashville knows the group that they have there, and, you know, how they've made the playoffs and been, you know, trying to be a contender to win the cup. And, you know, as a player, that, you know, you want to be a part of teams that have a chance to win the cup. And so when Nashville showed interest, it was right away a big point for me to realize that this group is, you know, like I said, competitive and has all the pieces that I believe you need to win a cup. You look through their lineup, they've got all the pieces you know, great character guys and guys that have been in the league that have a lot of experience mixed in with some young guys too, and a great coaching staff. So it had all the points there that, you know, you want to be a part of. You want to always be contending, making the playoffs and going on deep runs. And this team has it all.
Of course, historically, we always think about Nashville and the great defensemen that have played there in their franchise history. And McDonagh was asked about it. He's excited to go play with guys like Roman Josi and Matthias Ekholm. Don't know where they are in terms of a cup chase. Obviously, the biggest question looming in Nashville, that dark cloud over their city, is the future of Philip Forsberg, much like it is here with Johnny Gaudreau. And Forsberg had a career year last year, 42 goals, 84 points in 69 games. But where were you? You asked me earlier. Now, your chance to give your thoughts. Where were you in terms of surprise level that it was Nashville for McDonagh?
I can't say I'm stunned. I think I've always looked at the Predators as a defensive first team, and a team that's always four or five really solid defensemen deep. I don't think I would have had them pegged at the top of my list for Ryan McDonagh, but I think it's a good fit. I think it's a team that you know, fits what Ryan McDonagh does well at this point in his career, and that's defend. And the chance to pair him up with another elite defenseman, whether that's Ekholm in a defensive role or, you know, Roman Josi, he kind of fits that mold of veteran defenseman there. Josi and Ekholm both 32 and McDonagh 33 years old. So, you know, you're pushing things on that national defense the next couple of years when you get up there in age and all three of these guys are on significant contracts. But I think it fits their MO to a T. That's what I think of when I think of Nashville is, you know, whether it's going back to the Shea Weber days or Dan Hamm, you know, those guys, they've always had.
Well, yeah, and it doesn't matter who's, or doesn't seem to matter who's behind the bench. It kind of always follows that style. And
yeah, defense, build from the defense first is always how I've seen Nashville. So to be the landing spot doesn't surprise me. And for Tampa Bay, look, I have to say I'm impressed by their ability to, you know, cut the cord and move on. I don't think it was easy. But I think Julian Brisebois learned pretty on in his tenure in Tampa Bay from Steve Yzerman, well, you have to make these tough decisions and you have to go through your lists and say, look, who's making too much money? Where can we fill in with a cheaper option? Whatever that name is, regardless of how painful it might be, because he's been a great player for you and you've won two Stanley Cups with him, you have to make that move. And they're not sentimental in Tampa Bay. They're about winning championships, and however they get there and the best fashion they get there, the quickest fashion they get there is what's important to them, and they find a return that's acceptable to them, and they get the cap space and move on. So from that point of view, they don't rest on their laurels for very long.
Meanwhile, it does seem like we're waiting, much like we are in Calgary, about Philip Forsberg, although it sounds like they're getting closer on a deal. Of course, an eight-year deal also on the table for Philip Forsberg. What's your gut tell you there? It kind of feels like he's going to stay, but I also, because we are on July 4th, wouldn't be surprised if he left. But I've always thought he was going to stay, but as it goes on here, I definitely have to think about the possibility that he isn't in Nashville colors next year.
Yeah, it's almost the same situation as Gaudreau, just a year younger. And we've talked about, you know, the irony that they're both born on August 13th and simply a year apart. The irony doesn't stop there. They both coming off of career seasons and have a chance to, you know, cash out in the free agent market. I won't be stunned. I think he's had a good run in Nashville, and I think he can see a team there that's willing to be competitive. And I think that McDonagh move is probably part of selling that to him and say, hey, look, we're willing to make moves to be a better team and to be a competitive team going forward. If you stick around, we can do that. I just always worry, and it's the same thing I said with Gaudreau, when you're this close and you've never been a free agent, is it too tempting to just wait a week and a bit and see what's out there and possibly find your next home for 7 years on the free agent market? I think it's a tough battle to go through, and I think it's one that, you know, Gaudreau's probably going through, and it's one that Forsberg's probably talking about with his camp.
He was a trade chip, it felt like, for a majority of, well, even last year, and now certainly as the early parts of the offseason played out. But the Vancouver Canucks have signed Brock Besser to a three-year extension worth $6.65 million per year. Next on the contract extension to-do list, according to many, if you're the Vancouver Canucks, finding a way to get Captain Bo Horvat locked up long-term. He's entering the final year of his current deal. That'll pay him $5.5 million. And $2.1 million remaining in cap space now for Vancouver after the Besser signing. Just feels like these trade rumors involving JT Miller aren't going away, and kind of feels like we might see him traded before the end of the week, Logan.
Sure does. Kind of feels like if we're not there, then that's a deal to watch ahead of the draft. We've been waiting, feels like, for a very long time for this deal to come through, and I think Vancouver's being patient because they know the return on a JT Miller should be high and should net them a considerable amount coming back. But yeah, to me, the Besser signing was a pretty clear indication that they were set to move on from JT Miller. And hey, after 99 points last year, that return should be pretty hefty for Vancouver.
I know the one that I saw, and I know that he's a couple of years older, but people were talking about if you can somehow, if you're the team getting him in a trade, if you can have a wink, wink, nudge, nudge, or a handshake-type deal on an extension, the belief is the return could be similar to Kevin Fiala, which, of course, was a high prospect and a first-round pick. I would think, at the minimum, that's a return for JT Miller.
Yeah.
First-round pick, and maybe not an A-level prospect, but Probably a
pretty
couple.
Close to it, yeah. Yeah, that's. I'd say that's in line with. As long as you can get an extension hammered out, then you're.
Or a pretty good indication that you will get one done at some point.
Yeah, that's always the biggest one with guys like that, right?
With 1 year left on his deal.
You don't want to hammer out a ton of
assets
to Vancouver and then have him walk away from you or have to trade him at the deadline and get pennies in return.
So we'll watch that one as Thursday gets closer. A reminder that we've got all kinds of draft coverage for you here on Sportsnet 960. Even though the Flames don't pick until the second round, we've got full coverage for you from Montreal. As the NHL draft goes on Thursday, coverage begins at 5 o'clock, continues Friday morning at 9, and it's all brought to you by our friends at the Kinsmen Children's Home Lotto. Purchase tickets right now before the July 21st early bird deadline to win the $1.6 million dream home plus $200,000 cash. Visit childrenshospitalhomelottery.ca. Please play responsibly. Into hour number three, when we come back, two very special guests and a Calgary Flames prospect and a Memorial Cup champion will join us around the corner as we kick off hour three with Sea Dogs defenseman Jeremy Poirier. All as we roll on, Big Show is live on your Monday morning, Sportsnet 960 The Fan.